I think Jeremy, is he the one? Or is John? Who's going to do the intro?
It's me.
I don't want John to open anything. I don't want John to open a document.
Don't you worry. I got it.
All right, you got it.
This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus horarius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves.
Wait, what'd she say?
This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your
kelvins.
Head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Michael and John?
Yeah.
Indeed.
It's working.
Yeah. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. I just saw someone just posted that, hey, John, what's up? Michael Dean. Hey, John.
What's
hey
up,
Jeremy.
Man?
Hey.
Hey,
it's good to have you guys on. Glad to get John. Yeah. John was running to catch the boat, to get on the Fiend boat, and just made
yeah, it.
Like, had to jump, almost fell in the water, but made it just in time. Because we care. Because we care here, and because we can do our own troubleshooting. And unlike most shows, we don't go, I don't know what to do if things don't work. You know, shows that, like most shows that have to have, you know, well, a lot of shows either have a producer, an engineer, you know, like big shows, or a lot of shows need a producer and engineer and don't have them, but should. But we're our own producer and engineer. Yeah. Somebody just tagged me on something where they said that they got tagged and they got carded and they're like 45. They're like, wow, I must look young. And, you know, that's a combination of not looking over 100, but it's also like statism. I don't think it really says you're, you know, that young.
No.
Cards.
Yeah, it depends. I know there's some places I go to that will card me regardless. It's usually like if it's a new. It's usually if like there's a new employee there. They're like so they card everybody because they get. You know, I remember back in the days working in convenience stores and stuff. Our boss used to beat it into our head. If you don't know the person, then you need to card. You need to ID them every time. I don't care. So you know, it could be one of those situations. Just you know, fear of the government. Oh no, got to card this person. Got to make sure they're the right age.
I don't do anything that gets carded. Does John? Do you, John?
Every now and then,
ammo.
I mean,
I've been carded for ammo, actually.
But. I'll go to a casino every now and then with one of my friends who's a gambling addict.
He is a gambling addict? Are you a sponsor? Are you Gamblers Anonymous sponsor?
I'm his official enabler.
Yeah, he could be a sponsor. You just go to the casino and not gamble. You just drink and do coke and get hookers, right?
Well, we did all that, too.
Really? Wow. I've never
except
I've never
for the last
a
part.
Wow.
Yeah, the last part we didn't do.
I've never got a hooker. I dated a few
me
hookers.
Either.
But
I've never done that.
They gave it to me. They paid me, man.
Would you admit it on the air if you did?
Yeah. Dude, you haven't read my first novel, John, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women, have you?
It's No, but it sounds awesome.
It commits 3 felonies per page, and it's partially based on truth from my past. It's a fiction book I wrote in the year 2000, the first book I wrote, and I self-published it like going to, this is before you could do it on the internet. I had to go to a print shop called Punks with Presses in Oakland, California, and, you know, did the page layout myself and spent $4,000 getting 1,000 copies, and it's a you know full length novel, and it actually looks really good. The printing like looks better than books that I do now and people do now, you know online. Like there's some because it was printed with 4-color offset printing. Where when we do these online the stuff we do online, John does this and I do this, and they look pretty darn good. I mean it's pretty stunning. But do you know how those are made, John? The books that we get on Amazon, stuff like that. The paperbacks?
Are they're printed one at a time, print to order, right? I know that.
Yes,
but
they're printed on a giant computer printer. it's like your home printer, but it's huge. Like, for instance, you know, we upload our colors as RGB, not CMYK. When you do stuff at a print shop, you have to output it as CMYK because they actually make 4 different plates, one for each color that are used in CMYK printing, like for the covers, and you know they're hand bound and they're just a little better when they do them in a print shop and they're done right. But yeah, it was out of print in the year 2000, and I've been going through it over the past couple weeks and proofing it to get it ready to put out for the next pressing, which is going to be a Kindle and a paperback. And it's going to be so much better of a book because I could really write in the year 2000, but I didn't know grammar. And I not only didn't know grammar, but like didn't know punctuation. That's a big problem with that book. And I tried to do some things that I thought were clever that really aren't. Like the book has end notes, you know, like footnotes, but at the end of the book, because it was easier to do them as end notes and footnotes. And the end notes are ridiculous. Like I realized like nobody read these end notes. They were just, you know, like me talking to myself while I was writing the book, not really the character talking and the characters. And so I deleted them. I mean, there were like 150 tech end notes. And in the whole book, there's probably two places I had to put something in the text to explain something that was in the end notes. And otherwise, like the other 148 were unneeded. I did things like, you know, the book is a lot about women and sex and catting around and rock and roll. Yeah. And, you know, it's about this character named Cash Newman, who's kind of a mythical version of me.
Cash like Newman if I, is my hero.
Yes. Cash Newman is my co-pilot. But, you know, Cash Newman says things like dating seven women isn't seven times the fun. It's seven times the hassle. And one of them always feels like killing you, you know, and he says beautiful things like that. But I thought it was really clever to, you know, I hadn't really read Selby then, but I was kind of doing things kind of like what Selby did of like, you know, using my own punctuation and using it consistently, like I always, whenever the word beautiful or beauty or beauties would come up, I'd put a capital letter, like beauty was a proper noun. And the same thing with heroin or any euphemisms for heroin, smack, dope, you know, chiva, whatever. It was always like a capital letter. And I just went through and just removed all of those. I had to do it manually too, because, you know, you can't just do search and replace, because like if it's the word at the beginning of a sentence, it should be start with a capital letter. But and I've just been going through, like, I went through first and had to do all of the, like, the only copy of it, I didn't have the original page layout file, so I had a PDF of it. So I had to, like, convert that to a Word document. And then, you ever convert a PDF to a Word document, either of you guys? It's horrible.
Oh, yeah, they make you once. Do that. Yeah.
Yeah, once. I did it once. Oh. I'll never do it again. Yeah.
I was thinking of a movie. You ever see Johnny Dangerously? I was thinking of that movie when I said that.
Oh, that's man. A good one. That's
such
classic.
A great movie.
That's funny.
Michael Keaton, but, Joe Piscopo.
What's he say one. Once about?
No, there's a lot. Joe Piscopo's character in that movie. He's you know, he's a hardline mafia guy. But anytime somebody says something to him about him, you know, he talks about his mom. Oh, like, my mother said that to me
people.
Once.
Yeah,
once.
Yeah. My mother said that to me once.
Once.
Yeah. So like when you convert, one of the main things it does is it puts a big space. Are we hearing? Do you guys hear music? No, it's my brain
I hear
melting.
Music, I hear noise.
I heard noise too.
I think it's John.
Flavin' a flashback.
It's John. It's John listening to Grateful Dead. Can you hear us, John?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not actually listening to Grateful Dead. He's having a flashback of listening to the Grateful Dead.
And it's we can hear it. It's humming. His brain is humming. You know, actually, there was... So, yeah, it just makes a lot of formatting problems, but I had to fix them. Then I had to take another pass to fix all of my, like, stupid typography, and then I make it another pass to actually read it and make it make more sense. And that's going to come out on Kindle pretty soon. But, you know, I was watching this thing tonight about how I've been watching these YouTube videos about science stuff, like how NTSC television worked, how VHS tapes worked, like all the technology from my youth. Mm-hmm. I'm finally learning how it worked more. And one of them was like, he's like, you know, televisions, analog televisions gave off a quiet, high-pitched sound from like this coil vibrating on the tube, on the image tube. And you could actually hear it. And I'm like, I remember that. I could hear that like walking around quiet at night, like, you know, somebody, I could hear it on, you know, like from someone's house through closed windows. And then I'd look up and I'd see a, you know, flickering light of a TV. And, John, something's playing, something's feeding back, something's echoing. Put your headphones on.
I think it might be the hum of my computer.
Okay, turn down your headphones a little bit. That might help, please. We'll deal with it during the break. But And he's like, yeah, like, I remember that. And he said, but it's a sound that, is in the such a high-pitched sound that only young people can hear it. You can't hear it over a certain, most people over a certain age can't hear it. But if you're young, you'll hear this. And here's the tone. And then I just hear dead silence. And I'm like, yep, my ears used to be better. But I think we can hear the hum of the universe in John's brain. He's having a flashback.
It's possible. It's highly possible.
Yeah.
I'm curious about these end notes though. You said you stripped pretty much all but like two of them out. Was that just you trying to be ridiculously thorough back then, or were you?
It was me breaking the fourth wall, talking about writing the book a lot.
Ah, I see.
Like, it was mostly in character as me, not as Cash Newman. Mm-hmm. It was also like I just read this book that had. There was a popular crazy novel back then that was like 2,000 pages long that had footnotes. God, what was that called? It was by that writer that killed himself. So putting footnotes, friends don't let friends do footnotes. Novels with footnotes. Yeah. God, what was that guy's name? Crazy guy. Consider the footnote. Why more authors don't use this? Do you use footnotes, John?
I did for my first book, and then after that, I felt that there was really no purpose because I didn't really feel like anybody paid attention.
Oh, it's Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, who was kind of a like darling of alternative fiction for a while, and then he killed himself. And a lot of his books are about like substance abuse, recovery, suicide, family relationships, how families are the people that you hate, you know.
It always seems to be the people that like talk and write about that stuff that end up suffering that same fate.
Yeah, but I didn't, man. My book, Starving the Company of Beautiful Women, is a lot about suicide and depression. And I don't know about depression, but, you know, like there's a lot of negative moods. Cash Newman gets in a lot of moods. Now I just get angry. I never get suicidal anymore. I just yell at Jeremy and I feel better.
Yeah, well, that's what most people do. That's what I'm here for.
That's a real friend, man. Yeah. Yeah. So... We going out?
No, not
yet.
We got another minute.
Another minute. So the fun thing about this book is, and I want to encourage to see if John will do this. First of all, I've encouraged John to use the BIPCOT No Government License, which all my books have. But the paperbacks have an ISBN number because they'll give you one free on Amazon. But I kind of realized, like, man, that's old technology. And, you know, really, do you need that for a Kindle? So I made up something new that I'm using called a BIPCOT Book Identification Number, or BBIN. And I've used four of them so far. Like 00, like 13 zeros and then a 1 is the first one. And I have through four I've used so far. So I guess other people use them will have to start making a database. But yeah, well, BBINs, man.
If I ever get around to writing a book, I will make sure I use a BBIN.
Dog care and liberty.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Christy, it's good to be the king. The pig king. Yeah. Yeah, so we were getting a little noise from the hornets in John's brain, so it's actually his computer fan, so we had him put a towel under his computer, which did not deaden the fan, but it and he tilted the computer up a little bit, but it just kind of soaks up some of the noise. A big problem with laptops is okay, here's a little audio teaching hospital. So one of the worst things you can do with a microphone is put it on the table that you're, you know, typing on and touching things on and using a mouse on and putting your hands on. You know, your mic should not be on the table in front of you because it's just going to pick up all the noise. It also shouldn't be on the table in front of you because it should be on a mic stand near your mouth. You don't want a mic like 2 feet away. So we have mics that are on mic stands. Still get a little noise from John, but not as much. We'll work on it more during the next break. So, the worst thing you can do. Yeah, so the worst thing you can do is have it on the table. But another thing is laptop computers give off a lot of noise. And when they're sitting on a table, is it a wooden table, John? Metal table? What is it?
It's wooden, yeah.
Yeah. Wooden tables act like soundboards in a guitar, and they amplify the noise. So if you put a towel underneath it to physically isolate it, like a shock mount, between the computer and the table, it lessens by a large amount the amount of noise that's being put into the table and amplified.
Would it have the same effect if I say jacked the laptop up versus just putting the t-shirt underneath it? Like if I had, because I used to when I used to mine BIPs, I used to have both my laptops jacked up. I picked them up off the table and put little stands underneath them so there's more airflow. Would that work too?
Well, only because then the fan doesn't need to come on as often, probably.
Oh, okay.
Another thing you could do if you're doing a show like this that has John, do you have a fan, like a portable fan, anywhere in your house? We could try this. Hello, John.
Did we lose him? John?
He's cutting in and out. He's buffering hard. Yeah, you could put a what I would try to John, go away and come back. You're buffering hard.
Go away.
Go away and come back. Yeah,
go to the corner, John. We'll call you when you need
him. No, come back. Come right back. Close Fiend phone and come right back. You can put a fan on the computer between, you raise it up and put a fan on it during the breaks and then turn it off, because the fan will make a lot of noise that will be picked up by the mics.
But
if you put it, you there, John? You hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I was going to say you can blow a fan on your computer. You can raise it up a little bit so it's got airflow under it, and then blow a fan on it during the breaks to cool it down. Then the fan in it won't come on as often. Also, another thing you can do with computers when you're not on the air is clean the fan out in them with canned air. Like, you know, I usually have a vacuum cleaner handy when I'm doing that, and just wrap a, you know, bandana around my mouth so I don't breathe all the dust, and then just blow it out, or have someone else do it if you're sensitive to dust like me and John and I. That helps too. And you'd be amazed how much dust gets in computers. You ever open up computers, desktop computers too? I vacuum those out once a month, or if not more. Horrible.
Way back in the day when I was pretending to be a computer tech and worked with this company that did wireless internet before wireless internet became a big thing. We worked, one of the contracts they had was with the Plaza Hotel in New York City. And we built these little, little mini computers for every room in the Plaza. And one of my first jobs was to go to the different rooms and troubleshoot. And I had to carry, I usually had three cans of canned air strapped to me, because that was almost always one of the problems was I was opening it up and there was just hair and dust than everything inside these
cocaine
things.
Skin.
Yeah,
yeah. There was somebody I saw that did that for a living, that repaired computers for a living, that posted a picture on Facebook of they were called to troubleshoot a non-working computer on a farm, and it was a computer that was in the barn, in a building where they process corn, and grind it into cornmeal. The computer was a desktop computer, which, you know, are mostly empty inside. You know, the components don't take up that much of the room. It was completely full of cornmeal. You know, it had kilograms of cornmeal and moisture just caked in it.
So the fact that it even worked at all was impressive, I guess.
Yeah, it worked, but it didn't work very well, you know, because when the fan's not working, they get really hot and they'll eventually burn up. Where they do, they just don't work that well. Is that John? You there, John?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, the internet gods are not smiling on you tonight, but we'll whip them into shape during this break.
Yeah.
Taxation is theft. That should just be the footnote. I should put 150 footnotes that say that in my new version.
There you go.
Nah, Cash Newman's a lefty, man. He wasn't woke yet.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Spiders. Hunting spiders with my cat during break.
Yep.
So, Chris Christie. Chris Christie is the governor of New Jersey. He's a large
also
man.
Also a rather large man. I was going to say a rather large man.
You know, I don't make fun of people who are fat unless they're politicians or cops. Because then they got fat. That means they're like troughling at the trough even more. You know, they're even more of pigs with our money. Also, yes. Cops. Like, I really think that in a libertarian paradise, there wouldn't be any fat street cops. Maybe desk cops or detectives, but, you know, yeah, that's ridiculous. But Chris Christie thinks he's one of the Sopranos. And, you know, in other states, he would have been removed by now. Like, Bridgegate. Do you guys remember Bridgegate?
Oh, yes, I remember it all too well.
Yeah, what do you do?
So.
Oh, man. John, hey, sounds
Max
like...
Max Headroom's back.
Max Headroom's back. Yeah, that ain't working, John. Hey, John, why don't you go and we'll call you during the break. We'll try to fix it or see if you can fix it. It ain't working. All right. That's too bad. I wanted to show it, John. But I do.
Me too.
So, Bridgegate. What was Bridgegate?
Oh, I don't even remember the whole story. It was something about him or somebody in his cabinet or whatever they call it for the governorship ordered a shutdown of some of the lanes. And then I don't even remember the reason anymore, but they lied about it. They kept lying about it. They said, it wasn't us. We didn't do that. And, like, you know, a couple of weeks later, it was like, oh, yeah, that was us. We did it.
I think it was to make his opponent in a re-election look bad somehow.
I think it had something to do with it, but it ended, you know, it's horrible because it was shutting down lanes to the George Washington Bridge, which is a nightmare most of the time anyway. So adding even more traffic by shutting down lanes is a recipe for disaster because, you know, well, New Yorkers aren't very nice about that stuff to begin with.
They were retribution against Fort Lee's Mayor Mark Skulchich, a Democrat who did not support Christie as a candidate in the 2013 election. He was the sitting government. He can't stand it. It was the sitting governor, and he's up for re-election. Yeah, and so let's see. Why did this harm that guy? Was it his town?
Well, Fort Lee is close to that area. I guess it did, but it affected a lot more people than just that because it messed with traffic coming in and out of the state of New York.
Yeah,
because many people travel, you know, to get in and out of New York. They use the George Washington Bridge, and that's how they get in and out. So,
yeah, and it works in New Jersey. Like, acting like Tony Soprano works in New Jersey because, you know, that state has always been more mafioso and more corrupt and more coercion than ever. You know, it's, oh, yeah, they did that to our bridge once, or, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of attitude. But it worked against him later because that's part of the reason he wasn't a contender, really, in the presidential race against Trump.
Well, I don't think he ever was going to.
There's other reasons, he was running, but he had really poor turnout in New Hampshire because in New Hampshire they don't like that stuff.
It's weird because the whole Trump thing is kind of an anomaly anyway, because there was a longstanding thing that nobody from the Northeast, no governor would ever gets elected president because, well, most of the rest of the country looks down upon the Northeast, especially New York and New Jersey, the tri-state area.
Yeah.
Most of the country looks down on us over here. So, the fact
New
that
York City, get a rope.
Yeah.
Yeah, like those ads. You know those ads?
Yes.
There's some chili ad, and it's, I guess there's some kind of popular kind of chili that's made in New York City, and there's a competing kind that's made in Texas. And you know, the Texas brand has a commercial where there's some cowboys out on the range back in the day, and he's like, "What kind of chili is this?" And the guy holds up the bottle and he says, "This chili's made in New York City." And one of the other cowboys says, "New York City, get a rope. Like, we're going to hang this person to death by the neck for using chili from New York instead of Texas." So
I remember those.
Yeah. You know, which is kind of weird because, and I'm going to talk about 9/11, September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center in 2001, and some of you might think, too soon, but, you know, it's kind of weird. Here's how Americans are, well, how people are. It's not, I'm not just going to pick on America. Everyone's like this. People are horrible everywhere, but a lot of people are. So, most of America hates New York City, and like, you know, no daughter of mine is going to go to college in New York City, that kind of attitude. But when the World Trade Centers were hit, all of a sudden, all of America, especially the really rural parts of America that were like, New York City, get a rope, were like, them people attack our towers. I thought that was a real disconnect.
I was surprised. We're all New Yorkers now.
Yeah, I was surprised Texas didn't say good, you know? Too soon.
Well, I have a feeling that a lot of people, at least quietly, were saying that because I know a lot of people actually said that to me.
I think that's why they had to do the press push to make the police and firemen such heroes after that. And yeah, there were police and firemen who did heroic things that day, but there were also a lot of citizens that did heroic things that day. You don't think so?
Oh, no, there's definitely citizens that did it, but
I mean,
I don't know about the police. The firefighters, definitely. They were already,
Running into a burning building that's over 100 stories high is pretty heroic, but
Right. There was average citizen, you know, regular plebs like us. They were running in the building trying to save people too.
Yeah, so. I know. But they were, you know, digging people out with their hands and you know, bringing their dogs to help look for bodies or living people. You know, until the state probably chased them away and said, "No help needed here. We have a monopoly on this heroism." But, you know, and I'm not saying they weren't heroic, but what'd they do?
Oh, no, I was going to say, they did kick everybody out, but it was under the guise of safety. Oh, no,
right,
no, no.
Right.
You know, for your own safety, we need to handle this. You know, the cleanup probably would have got done quicker if they hadn't done that, if they had let people continue
right,
to help.
Right.
Because everybody ended up, because, you know, okay, fine, safety concerns, health concerns, I can understand that, but everybody who was down there ended up getting sick anyway, and people are still dying to this day.
I know.
You know? I'm one of those people who probably should be affected because I was there less than a week after it happened for two straight weeks in that vicinity doing work for, you know, trying to repair the stuff that got damaged on our end. And
I was there 3 weeks later, too. I was interviewing people for DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, and I'd booked the interviews and bought a plane ticket before that happened. And, you know, it was 3 weeks after, and everyone's like, don't go, it's scary, don't go. And I'm like, I'm going to go. You know, and I interviewed some people at 600 Broadway, which is what, three blocks, six blocks from Ground Zero. I mean, the air was thick with like the smell of burning computers and concrete and people and glass. And yeah, it was horrible. But I mean, I think that the national, like, you know, there's heroism and then there's really, though, it's just doing your job and doing your job to the best of its ability. It should be. But it's, you know, and I'm fine with someone getting a plaque and a ham for that or whatever. But I think the national media jumped onto that to get the people in the New York get a rope states on board with it's our planes, you know.
Oh, sure.
I mean, think about.
I don't remember the term first responder being a big
before
thing
before that.
Until that event. I mean, I know I'd heard it before, but I don't remember it being like pounded into people's heads until after September 11th. Then all of a sudden, first responders, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah, yep. And you know, firemen got ladies a lot easier after that, shall we say, is what I heard.
Yeah, well, they get it. Well, at least by some of the stories that some of my friends came across after my incident a few months ago, we learned that they have their way with the ladies no matter what, quite often, because apparently, according to the news stories,
talking about rape.
Yeah, there's a very high rate amongst firefighters and rape. Also, wow. There's also a very high rate.
You really want to go there, Jeremy? You really want to go there?
Listen, I don't make up the news, Michael. I just report it. Okay?
It's true. All right.
But, you know, also with arson, too. But that's a whole other story.
Oh, yeah. Firemen and arson, there's definitely a... Yeah. I don't know what the stats are, but I know that there have been several high case, long running, who's doing this arson, strings of arson, where it turned out to be either a fireman or I think a couple times it was someone who got turned down to be a fireman.
Yes.
People. Humans. All right, yes. So what'd Chris Christie do? This is a long way of getting around to what Chris Christie did.
Oh, yes, Chris Christie. Well, recently, apparently they're having, you know, money issues in New Jersey, go figure. There's a partial government shutdown. So Mr. Christie announced that they were going to be shutting down some of the you know, quote unquote state beaches, including Island Beach State Park, for the holiday weekend, and they weren't allowing anybody in except him and his family, who just happens to have a taxpayer funded beach house there. So of course him and his family were allowed to go, and there was, you know, there's pictures taken of them, and now
drone pictures.
Drone pictures.
I'm sure they'll find out whoever took the drone pictures and like arrest them for terrorism for flying a little baby drone over and taking pictures. Someone recently got arrested for flying a drone above a forest fire and was taking pictures, like, you know, up above the smoke of the forest fires, which are, I've seen pictures taken like that, I think, by, you know, authorized news ones, and they're stunning. It's stunning video. But yeah, someone's in jail right now for doing that, because some states like treat you like a terrorist if you do that. And they actually did things like shut down air traffic. Like they made the state made the fire spread more, basically, so they could blame this person. Like they stopped sending in helicopters dropping water, you know.
Wow.
Until they could find this guy and grab him and steal his drone.
Thanks, humans. Government.
Thanks, government.
Meow.
Meow. They got a monopoly on everything, including wasting money.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by BIPCOT. Thank you for being a fiend.
Off the boat, we gave him a dinghy. We gave him a little rubber raft and a
bottle of water and a pack of saltine crackers, and said, "Call us back later."
yeah, exactly. One bottle of water, threw him out in the middle of the ocean.
He'll be fine.
Okay, he'll drift over to the Fort Lee Bridge, and some first responders will help him.
Yeah,
we were talking about first responders. We did some Google foo during the break, and found out that Google foo. Yeah, that's the magic of using Google. We found out that the term first responder started, or at least started in earnest and lit large, so everyone used it. 9/11, 9/11, yep. 9/11, 9/11.
Just like I thought. I mean, that was an offhanded comment by me. I thought that was the case, but now we've proven me right for once. Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the police or firefighters union came up with that term and fed it to a reporter that was friendly to them, because it
definitely could be.
What that term does is it makes police and firefighters unquestionable. Like, you can't say anything bad about them or you're un-American. That's what it comes down to. That's what they're trying to do.
Oh, and they do it very well, too. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to make them, have the, yeah, that's a whole lot of hooey. We don't talk about that. But, yeah. But it's I think it's an attempt from within to equate them with the military to where you have to respect them and revere them the way people do the military.
That could be the case. I think it also maybe instead of it might be also just the further infantilizing of the public at large to try to make them think that, you know, oh, you need the first responders because you can't do it yourself. Because I mean even back then when I was a hardcore statist, that phrase always bothered me, because I would always think, wait a minute, aren't, like, unless you're the one who's gravely injured, aren't you supposed to be your own first responder? Kind of, sort of, in a lot of situations, you know?
Well, so the funny thing is, too, a lot of times first responders are not the first responder to a emergency, but they still get to be called the first responders. You know, like, let's say you are driving along the highway, you see someone have an accident, you get out, call 911 and render first aid, then the first responders will get there, and generally, the first responders will get all the credit. Occasionally, they'll give the person the credit, but only if it suits, you know, if it suits the narrative. Like, I would say most mainstream news organizations would not even mention the person who rendered first aid. Like, let's say if there's someone who's very hated by the public for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you, Jeremy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I would never get mentioned.
Yeah.
or they'll mention him in passing, kind of like, oh, and this, you know, this brave motorist stopped to help and waited until the real heroes showed up, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Or if it's you, they might say, you know, he got in the way until the real person was
He was in we arrested him because he was impeding our first responderness.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The things. Yeah, and people think I'm joking, but if you've never been to New York, this is a real possibility. Even if you're not me.
New York City, get a rope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there are plenty of times that I've thought the entire state should hang itself, but that's a whole other story.
Wow. You know, I wonder,
not the people,
too, if there
the
was,
state itself.
I wonder, too, if there were a big terroristic attack in San Francisco or L.A., how the people in the flyover states, like where I am, would think of it. You know, the people who just, the people who half of what they post in flyover states that like Trump voters, and people that half of what they post on the internet is, secede, I wish California would just fall into the ocean. You know, those people. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, there was a terror attack there, if the flyover folks would be like, our leftists were attacked. Our transsexual leftists were attacked. This will not stand.
I'd be willing to bet that if there was, you know, I don't wish this upon anybody, but if there was another big attack like now, like, you know, that, you know, soon, next year, whatever, I'm guessing that everybody could get, you know, riled up just as easily by the news media to all, you know, like, even the flyover states to say silly things like that. Except here in New York. Here in New York, everybody would be going, eh, we got hit. Screw those guys.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
It was much worse when it happened to us. You guys are big babies. I could totally see New Yorkers doing that.
We'll be back to start the show in about 8 minutes here.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Just a warm-up, folks.
Yep.
It was the variety hour, so there you go.
That's the variety hour. The first hour is the variety hour. I like that.
Well, we'll come back after this break. We shall regroup, and we'll be bigger, better, stronger. Worms. Are
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Welcome, Belfouche. Welcome to Sundance.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit
ion. What's a fiend?
Hi atop. Hold all questions to the end, please. Hi atop Financial News Plaza on the artificial satellite Live There 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So we are back. We are the Freedom Fiends.
What's a fiend?
What's a fiend? A fiend is our way of saying fiend, but yeah. You know, it's much cooler. So we are the fiends, and I you know, if you, if you, that's Michael.
If you search, this is funny. So I'm not logged into Google, and I'm searching Freedom Fiends, and the autofill suggestions are worms, Freedom Fiends worms, because we say worms instead of word. Freedom Fiends blog. Freedom Fiends Facebook, Freedom Fiends Archive, and Freedom Fiends Cantwell.
Whoa.
That's the sixth autofill. That's funny.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah, because, you know, he just gloms onto us and talks about us all the time because he's nobody and he's trying to try to ride our coattails.
I haven't heard anything from him in a while. It's been quite nice, actually.
I don't know. I think we'd hear if he was dead. I think someone would tell us.
Probably.
Yeah, I think that would make it into my feed.
Yeah.
So I found a, speaking of people who are the police or love the police, like Cantwell, I found Christopher Cantwell, that is, who's a fake libertarian, who we haven't mentioned in a long time. But, you know, I just like to see him twitch.
So. I don't even know if we have to call him a fake libertarian anymore, because he calls himself a fascist. So now, so we can just call him a fascist. And be done with it.
You know, I saw this lady that I used to know in L.A. or in San Francisco that I knew back in the day, in the Cash Newman days. Didn't know her biblically, or not very biblically. I got to
not very biblically with her. Only partially.
Under the skirt.
Only the first base. Book.
Second. I got the first chapter with her. But she's just more of a friend, you know, and she was she's someone that I knew in recovery. You know, we were in the meetings together when we got sober. And she's still sober. And I saw her today on my feed. I was like, oh, great. She looks, you know, she's doing well. You know, life's still happening for her. And she's married. Okay, who's she married? I'm scrolling down. And, like, first thing I see is, like, you know, she has this big, like, the last thing she posted. Well, no, she posted it since then. It was like, you know, why Bernie Sanders says America is doomed. And she posted it. Like, you should listen to this. You know, like, okay, yeah. She's from San Francisco. She's an inveterate liberal. Of course she likes Bernie Sanders. Then I go look at her husband, and he's posting, like, here's why you need to listen to Trump, and here's why the Second Amendment is important. And then I look at him, and he's got an 88 tattoo. You know what that is?
Oh, yes.
Like, it's Heil Hitler. It's HH. And, you know, I'm just like, I kind of want to be a fly on the wall to hear their talks, you know?
I don't know either of these people, and I want to be a fly on the wall to hear these talks. That's got to be
I want to hear the husband and wife, who one of them's a Bernie supporter and the other's a, you know, former or, well, I don't know if he's a current, you know, a current Hitler lover. He may have gotten the tattoos. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, misspent youth. But he's certainly a current Trump supporter and, you know,
he's
gun lover.
Trumpite.
Yeah. I'm like, wow. And, you know, I don't even know if I'm judging either of them. They both have lifestyles I disagree with. But, you know, tolerance. As Bernie would say, tolerate. Oh, man. Yeah. Too soon. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, if they hear this, I just want to say I'm not saying anything bad about you people and your choices. And, you know, you find love where you can and it's all good. But I just want to hear their conversations. Maybe they have a agree to disagree policy.
Yeah, I'd want to invite them on my show just to find out because I'm very curious about that. I mean, I've come across.
I could make it happen.
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
Introduce you. Yeah.
I mean, I've come across plenty of people in the past who have those relationships where, like, you know,
Democrat and Republican.
Yeah.
There's a lot of couples.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But that severe, that's pretty, pretty
Bernie
out there.
Supporter and alt-right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like hardcore alt-right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Young love. All right. So the image for today's fiends I just sent to you. Did you get it? It's Velociraptor. Velociraptor is just a weird lizard looking quizzical, or dino lizard looking quizzical. And, you know, he's saying, if police officers always say they fear for their lives, does that mean they're not as brave as they say they are?
Ooh.
And I say you got to pick one or the other, because cops constantly shoot dogs and shoot black people and shoot white people and get away with it by saying, I was in fear for my life. But if they're in fear for their life, that, you know, they also say, people say they're so brave, they're the most brave occupation. You know, people also say it's the most dangerous occupation. It's actually a pretty safe occupation. Statistically,
I think it's like number 15 or something.
Long haul truckers, firemen have a much more dangerous job than policemen.
Absolutely.
And long haul truckers have a higher death and injury rate than policemen. And you know what?
Loggers have a higher rate too.
Get hurt doing chasing people in traffic stops.
Yep.
Like basically, you're going above the speed limit, so I'm going to go above the speed limit and stop you. That's how most cops get hurt.
It's like when the death numbers for cops get trotted out every year. Oh, this many police officers died in the line of duty. The average citizen will look at it like, oh, that's horrible, you know, how horrible the men in blue died. But if you actually parse through the numbers, you find out that the majority of them that died while on duty, like, there's a high number of heart attacks.
Heart attacks from donuts and cream.
Yeah, going back to the earlier conversation about overweight cops, or traffic accidents. And a lot of them are traffic accidents caused by them, like you were saying. So, like, those are actually often rival them actually getting shot in some kind of shootout or something. So, yeah.
And also, when they get shot in a shootout, they're usually going somewhere they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. I mean, really, they generally get shot by somebody who, often, not always, sometimes they get shot in domestic abuse. And I would say that in a libertarian paradise, there would be some kind of, you know, hired busybody you could send to intervene when someone's beating their wife or husband. But maybe, who knows? Not if they didn't sign up for it, I'm sure the liberals would say. But A lot of times when cops get shot, they're going into, you know, they're trying to arrest people for drugs. And I'm not saying it's a good thing to shoot people, but I'm also saying the fact that drugs are illegal have made them so lucrative that people consider them worth shooting people over to protect their trade.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and you'll never end it. You'll never end drug use. And there's even a strong argument that the war on drugs has increased the amount of drugs in the world at any given time, has increased the potency of those drugs, and has reduced and has made a lot of smugglers. Hardly, there's not much pot smuggling anymore because they figured out how to grow better pot here than they can smuggle in.
Yes.
And so most drug smuggling now is cocaine and speed and heroin, and not even speed that much because
thanks CIA.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, basically, it's the same idea with prohibition of alcohol. Liquor wasn't that common in America. It was mostly beer before prohibition, but prohibition made it so they could really only want to smuggle liquor because it was more potent. You know, a gallon of liquor is worth more, you know, a truckload of liquor is worth a lot more than a truckload of beer. So,
yes.
And a kilo of heroin is worth a lot more than a kilo of pot.
Yep.
Although pot's getting so good, it's getting close. But yeah. And, you know, they've basically like cut off the head of people being able to get opiates into the country easily. So a lot of what it is now is, what's that opiate that's really, 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 really fentanyl, powerful?
No, fentanyl.
Because fentanyl's being diluted and sold on the street as heroin now. And fentanyl,
that stuff will mess you up.
Fentanyl can be purchased by mail order from China.
Yes.
You know, I was going to say legally, but, you know, it's definitely illegal here. I don't know if it's legal in China, but there are companies that will sell, you know, a kilo of fentanyl there for about what a kilo of heroin costs here. And it's, you know, hundreds of times more powerful.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it is legal. You know? I believe it is over the counter there. From what I remember. I'm not positive, but from what I remember, I think it is, which is why people can get it from there. But yeah, that stuff's dangerous, man. I mean, I think I've talked about it before. My ex has been on and off a fentanyl patch the entire time I've known her because she has a pretty bad rheumatoid arthritis. And whenever she would come down off that stuff, if she would like stop taking it, like, you know, she'd go through withdrawals. Just from this tiny little patch you stick on your arm and it gets absorbed into your skin. It's some potent stuff. And yeah, they're using it to cut heroin. And I've heard it's even made its way into the cocaine supplies too, because they're using it to cut it so they can save money. But a thimbleful of this stuff can kill you. So
a thimbleful? No, an amount you can barely see can kill you. A thimbleful could kill hundreds of people, thousands of people. Yeah, the doses of heroin are milligrams, like 30 milligrams or something is a strong dose of heroin.
That's right, yeah.
Like 30 micro, like 100 micrograms, like a tenth of a milligram is a big dose of fentanyl. And you know why they're mixing it with Coke? Is to give people a double addiction. I saw the same thing right around the time I quit doing heroin, which was 1994. Like the last probably five or six times I bought it on the street, it was what's called a one-in-one. Like usually you'd buy a quarter gram of heroin for $20 or $25, and it'd be a little balloon that you'd open up, like a children's balloon wrapped around, you know, like it was basically a little ball of like children's balloon. And they keep it in their mouth because inside it there was cellophane that had the heroin in it. And if they, you know, if they carry like 8 or 10 of these in their mouth while they're dealing, and they'd have like a bunch more stashed under a tree so they wouldn't have it on them if they get caught. And the idea was if the cops came up to them, they could swallow these and pass them. They could poop them out and then sell them to you. You know, they were double bagged basically so they could be swallowed. But they started doing one-in-ones, which was for the same price. You'd get $10 worth of heroin and $10 worth of Coke, because they were trying to get all the heroin addicts also addicted to Coke.
All
the profits. Yeah. You'd actually find little bags of Coke on the ground that junkies would throw down because they didn't want it. San Francisco, where the streets are paved in Coke.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Meow. All right. We're talking about free speech probably for the rest of the show. Because we've been expressing free speech, saying whatever we want, but now we're going to talk about it. So there's a documentary called Nobody Speak. What's the full title of it? Jeremy.
Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press.
Yep, and it's on Netflix now. It's a weird movie because I thought, like, I started watching it, and they were talking about the Hulk Hogan Gawker lawsuit, and I thought, you know, I thought it was going to have, like, it was going to cover, like, seven different lawsuits and then discuss various aspects of them, but it pretty much just covered this one thing, and, like, you know, I'm two-thirds of the way through it, I'm like, wow, they're still talking about Hulk Hogan. Okay. But, so, I learned a lot I didn't know about this Hulk Hogan tape. So, lawsuit. So, give me the facts as you knew them before you saw this movie about the Hulk Hogan Gawker case.
Yeah, well, from what I knew about it, we were talking about this a little earlier, was he apparently had sex with his former best friend's wife, and
best friend at the time.
Yeah, well,
the best friend was filming it.
Cuck. Yes.
The word cuck did not occur in this movie for some reason, but
no,
Bubba the Love Sponge.
Yeah. Cuck. Well, yeah. You can sue me,
Bubba the Love Sponge. I'm calling you a cuck.
Hulk's now former best friend, Bubba the Love Sponge, who is a radio personality.
I better be careful. He might be on GCN now. Let me check first. Go ahead.
He was on Sirius. I don't know where he went. But anyway, so the story goes that apparently there was a couple of situations where Hogan and Bubba's wife got together, and it was videotaped. Now, Hogan claimed at the time that he knew nothing about the tape. Bubba claimed that everybody involved knew what was going on and knew it was being taped. But anyway, the story got the tape got out. It ended up in the hands of somebody at Gawker. Gawker magazine, and I think they only had a piece of it, and then as soon as it came out, there was more rumblings of another tape that also involved Hogan and Bubba's wife, but the second one had Hogan using a bunch of racial epithets,
and
slurs against homosexuals, like, just nonstop throughout this video.
I wonder what it was. I wonder if it was like, "Ooh, baby, call me an N-word."
Yeah, I don't know.
You're my little homosexual. Yeah. I don't know.
I never saw the tape, so I don't know. Like, but this,
how does that get up? How does that end up in a sex tape? I don't understand.
I have no idea. But that's what ended up happening. And
did you know about that part before you saw this movie?
Yes.
I want to know what you knew before
you know,
saw
that's
this
what I'm saying. I knew all these things because I was, you know, I was a Howard Stern fan for a long time, and I got to know Bubba the Love Sponge because of him. And then I heard the stories. I knew that Hogan and Bubba were friends. And then when this broke,
was Bubba on Stern? Was he a sidekick on Stern?
No. He had his own show. He was he was a radio host from Florida. And it has been,
but he's syndicated, right?
He was. I don't know if he still is anymore, but he was. Yes. But anyway, so that's, I knew all of that, and I knew that the friendship had ended up being broken up because of it. Because at first, Bubba was swearing up and down that he wasn't the one who released it. Then Hogan became
apparently
convinced
you
that
can
he
hear his
the
voice. They implied that there's a voice that's not the two people in frame. In the video at the beginning,
and it sounds
a lot like Bubba Love.
Yeah, I've heard clips of that, and if you know Bubba, if you've listened to Bubba's show, it sure as heck sounds like Bubba. You know, I know the guy's voice, so I heard that clip originally. It sounded like him. But anyway, this became a huge thing because this also dropped around the time that Hogan's because he had that reality show, his marriage was falling apart during the TV show, and then all of this broke, and then he turned around and just wanted to sue everybody.
Now here's the lesson with don't sue everybody. Like, he ended up getting a bunch of money, but that wasn't really his point. His point was trying to he had his lawyer send this letter to Gawker Media saying, if you take down this video right now, we will not take action against you. So he really just wanted the tape down. There's this thing called the Streisand effect, because named after Barbara Streisand wanting to, she tried to sue some magazine or some website for posting, might have been Google. She tried to sue somebody for posting like aerial footage of her property on the beach in Malibu. And, which is kind of that's a crazy request. That's, you know, you can see this from space. Make it go away. You know, it's kind of like, who did that? Vice President Dick Cheney did things like that. Like, he had his house removed from Google.
Yeah.
But and basically, like, it was a website nobody would have ever thought of. I would have never heard of it and seen it, and now I've heard of it and seen it because of that lawsuit.
Yep.
When you sue people to try to make stuff go away, it does not go away. It gets amplified, like the war on drugs. It works like the war on drugs. War on drugs is the Streisand effect. There's the show.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets. But we do it because we have to. For you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective Liberty Media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only Liberty Media Teaching Hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great Liberty speakers of today and tomorrow, and they, in turn, will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends, think of the kitties.
Trouble with the FCC. His problem is he's popular. We probably said the things he says, but no one listens to. I'm kidding. People listen to us, but
no. He was Bubba was one of those shock jock. Yeah, and the funny thing is him and he actually used to hate Stern, and then the two of them became friends. Like before they both ended up on Sirius together. I'm pretty sure that they did not like each other, or at least Bubba did not like him and used to say things about him, and then they became friends, but. Yeah, he was an interesting guy, but I don't know. He had a very interesting relationship with his friends and his wife. So, you know, to each their own, I guess. But yeah, so
share and share alike.
Yeah. So, and we've been talking about this documentary that
Bubba the Love Cuck. Put that in the show notes. Bubba the Love Cuck.
Yes, yeah. I will.
All right.
So. Yeah.
So I learned some things I didn't know about this. First of all, we should say what Gawker is for people on the radio who don't know what the internet is. So Gawker was a website. It's actually still a website. It's Gawker.com, but it's not active. There hasn't been a post in 2 years. It was kind of like the hipster weekly world news, I guess I'd say. You think that'd be accurate?
I think that would be fairly accurate.
It was link bait. It was shock and awe. And it was, you know, kind of like TMZ, but a little bit more about the internet more often and about people in the internet. But they'd do stuff about anybody.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So they published part of this sex tape that someone gave them.
Mm-hmm.
An anonymous source gave them. Because, you know, who knows? It's probably Bubba the Love Sponge, but I don't know. An anonymous source gave them this to hurt Hulk Hogan. I don't know. It's probably not Bubba, but they published it and they got in a world of hurt about it. They got sued. Basically, this movie is about the right to publish. And a lot of people would say, like, well, that's horrible. That's not newsworthy. They should be punished for that. But here's the thing. Free speech laws, like this, the First Amendment, have to protect horrible speech or they don't work. If they only protect popular speech, they don't even need to exist because popular speech, no one really worries about it. And, you know, if you're someone who thinks it's horrible that they're trying to make it a hate crime to talk about my religious beliefs, you know, which lefties are trying to do. It's equally horrible to say that Gawker should not be able to publish this sex tape about Hogan. And I would argue that if it was just a sex tape, period, it probably wouldn't be newsworthy. And there is a thing in the First Amendment of that it, you know, most interpretations of it say that it protects speech, that, you know, that its protections are not absolute. For instance, the Supreme Court once said it doesn't protect your right to yell fire in a crowded theater. It does not protect your right to incite. It does not protect your right to say, you know, you should go kill this cop on this day. Although it has been held to say that it can protect people saying, you know, I think killing cops ain't such a bad idea, because they're not saying, and I'm not saying that, I'm using that as an example, because it doesn't incite, in that it doesn't say a particular person in a particular manner in a particular day. So,
yes.
So he got in trouble. They got in trouble for publishing this. I think the newsworthy aspect of this is exposing the hypocrisy of Hogan, because Hogan has made a career for about 40 years being a hero for children who preaches being clean and living a clean life and not doing drugs and not being filthy minded and taking your vitamins and saying your prayers. I mean, he was like, he marketed himself as a hero for kids that parents could get behind, because there was nothing salacious about him.
Well, yeah.
So I think that it is newsworthy that in his real life, boy, is he not that person.
I would agree. And he even said it himself in the documentary. They showed clips from the court hearing, and there's him on the stand saying exactly what you just said, that, you know, his image, the Hogan image, was this all-American hero, and, you know, the vitamins things and the prayers things. But the most bizarre thing about that, and this is one part of it that I actually kind of forgot, that he really takes the whole, oh, Hulk Hogan's only a character, to
very
extremes.
Seriously. To the point where somebody, where one attorney, the opposing attorney asked him, so isn't this you on the Howard Stern show and bragging about the huge size of your penis? And he says, yes, that was me. I mean, yes, that was Hulk, me as the character Hulk Hogan, but I do not have a huge penis.
Oh, yeah, I was talking about...
He was that serious about this that he said under oath, on record, that he did not have a huge penis. I mean, that's...
But not only that, but the imaginary character that he has created for himself, well, actually, it was created for him by the WWE, formerly the WWF. Yeah, because they're the ones who come up with all that stuff. But because originally he was the incredible Hulk Hogan before he joined forces with the WWF back in the day, but they helped create that image for him. But not only did he admit that he doesn't have a big one, he also under oath said that he was talking about Hulk Hogan's big one, as if Hulk Hogan existed to have one. And then he kept saying to the guy, wow, I don't know how I can really explain this to you. I've tried to explain this to you. I don't know how I can get you to see it. we see it, Hulk. You're a schizophrenic at this point.
You know why the WWE is no longer the WWF, right?
Yes, because the World Wildlife
Foundation
sued them.
And got the name. Now, here's an interesting little tidbit of, like, God, is there anybody Michael Dean doesn't have a secondary connection to? One of the attorneys that was on the World Wrestling Foundation's, you know, the lawyers that were beating up the Penguins, basically, you know, that were beating up the wildlife. One of the lawyers representing the Worldwide Wrestling Foundation in that lawsuit was a former member of my band Bomb. It was this guy named Franklin Moline, who never played on a record, but toured with us on one tour. And I talked a while back about him. He died. We talked about, I think you were on the show, we talked about euphemisms. Like, you know, it said in the paper that he died after a long illness. And we were that could either mean that. AIDS or cancer or drugs. And we couldn't figure it out. That's the kind of friend I am, that if you die and you're my friend, that's going to be a topic on the show. You know, what the euphemism in the paper in your obituary meant. So, yeah. So there's so many weird angles. I'm going to try to cover them all about this Hulk Hogan thing. So a weird thing came up in the case. I didn't know about this till the movie. We've basically left everything I knew about the movie and then some. This is all stuff I learned from the movie. There were several charges, you know, and one of the charges was that there was emotional distress inflicted on Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
And at one point during the trial, and this was, you know, a big trial with big name, multiple attorneys and big, big name lawyers on this, and, you know, millions of dollars being spent by both sides. All of a sudden, Hulk Hogan dropped one of his charges. He dropped the charge. You know, he kept the charge of defamation of character, of I don't know what the other ones were, but, you know, reducing the value of his product or whatever. But
yeah, his brand.
He dropped the one of, yeah, of his brand, but he dropped the one of increasing
intentional infliction.
He dropped the one of intent. My wife just came in because she's a paralegal and she thought this was very interesting. Intentional infliction of emotional abuse. Distress?
Yes.
Yeah. And the reason they dropped that was because Gawker's law insurance company was paying for their defense because it came under the, like, you know, if you have certain kind of insurance and you accidentally harm someone physically, you know, sometimes your insurance will cover the legal defense of that. And this actually, the emotional, accidental infliction of emotional distress is under the same heading. So basically, as soon as Hulk, and they couldn't figure out why Hulk dropped that, because he was broke, he was having money problems, that was kind of the big payoff one, and he dropped that, and the reason he did it was, as soon as he did that, Gawker's insurance company quit paying for their defense.
Yeah, you
know, like, oh, the other charges, we don't insure for that. You're on your own, son. So,
yes, and that seems strange too. Until more of the story came out through the documentary, which I also did not know,
that somebody was paying for Hulk Hogan's defense,
yes.
Some mystery benefactor, and you know, everyone was trying to figure out like what could anyone have? You know, it's not friends, it's not family, it's not some fan. You know, it's somebody who wants to remain nameless. And you know, like, Hulk didn't have the money to launch this long.
Oh yeah, no, he was broke. That's why he was doing that TV show in the first place, because he technically
the reality show. Yeah,
yeah, he technically still worked for the WWF, but he wasn't there anymore. Like, he was just doing spot appearances.
He's out
stuff.
To
yeah.
He was out to pasture. I mean, he was a hero when I was a kid. And I'm 53. You know, he's been doing this for
mid 80s was when he started, because he was there at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't a kid, but you know, but I remember him from my youth. And I mean, I actually saw this show, this really great show I want to recommend. I can't go into it, but there's a show on Netflix, an original Netflix show called Glow, and it sounds ridiculous. The premise, it's about a 1980s women's wrestling, you know, fake wrestling, you know, like what Hulk did.
Gorgeous ladies of wrestling,
did you
baby.
See it? I
heard Brian Sullivan talking about it, but I remember that show. Remember Glow. I remember watching Glow back in the
day. That was a thing.
Okay, oh no, that's so what it came from. It was an actual. There was an actual wrestling organization called Glow. The gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
This is like, you know, basically a dramedy based on that. And I would never have watched this, except it has Marc Maron as one of the main characters, as like the coach.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, okay, wait, Marc Maron, you had me at Marc Maron. And Marc Maron doesn't have to change his clothes or his hair or his mustache to play someone from the early 80s. He looks like Marc. I think his mustache is brushed out a little bit and might have a little product in it. But other than that, he looks like he looks normally. Yeah, so, but in that, like, Hulk Hogan is mentioned several times because he was like, you know, the Led Zeppelin of wrestling at the time. So, so it turns out that the person, the mystery billionaire funding this thing, was Peter Thiel, T-H-I-E-L, the libertarian-esque, allegedly, founder of PayPal and early investor in Facebook and a bunch of other stuff. We'll be back after this trip to the market to tell you why I don't think he's very libertarian.
Me either.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
So it turns out he's a bad man. Yeah, he used to kind of be a mild hero of mine, but so basically Peter Thiel financed Hulk Hogan destroying Gawker. What was the Gawker's out of business? It was a popular website, you know, successful company, and this so-called libertarian billionaire came along and destroyed them because Gawker outed Thiel as gay, and he is gay. Wait, allegedly. He's allegedly gay.
Well, no, he's gay, and they outed him, but he went on this rampage, but it was like, you know, the guy who... I think everybody knew, number one. Number two, the guy who outed him was also gay. Because the owner of Gawker, the guy who owned Gawker and Jezebel and Gizmodo and all those other sites, is a gay man.
And, you know, outing somebody used to be like a death sentence. Like, it used to be people who were gay had to hide that they were gay because people would beat them up and try to kill them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
but that's not the way anymore, especially in in California. Now, here's the thing. I think being outed as gay made him a hero because he's a big player in Silicon Valley. And Silicon Valley is so often criticized, you know, by the diversity queens of the world. Of it's all run by straight white males. You need to get more gays and more people of color in there. And it's like, you know, hiding in plain sight, the 800-pound, you know, gorilla in the room is a gay guy. So I don't see the problem, but...
No, even the article that they wrote about him, it wasn't destroying him or like wasn't being mean to him or anything. The title was
link baity. It was like,
oh yeah, of course,
Peter Thiel is effing gay. Okay.
Yeah, but the article itself, it wasn't bad. It was just explaining, you know, that he is and why. And actually, I think it even said why that was a good thing, but he took offense to it. Now, of course, he swears that it had nothing to do with this. But, you know, he had this problem with Gawker 7 or 8 years beforehand. And then all of a sudden, he becomes the mysterious benefactor for Hulk Hogan, who once it was finally like, you know, nobody could figure it out at first. And once people finally started making the connections and asked him, then he very openly said, oh, yeah, it was me. I did it.
Yeah. And, you know, Peter Thiel, there's a character almost certainly based on Peter Thiel in the show Silicon Valley that we like. Do you like that show? Do you watch that show?
I haven't watched it yet. But
okay, spoiler alert. So there's a character, there's actually two characters that have aspects of him, because one character has a bunch of aspects of him, and another character has one aspect of him, which is that Peter Thiel gets transfusions of blood from young, healthy, athletic people in the belief that it will extend his lifespan, which totally seems like creepy Mr. Burns stuff. But
absolutely.
In Silicon Valley, there's a character, not the character based on him, but there's a character named Gavin Belson, which is a weird last name, Belson, like, you know, the place where the concentration camp was. Gavin Belson has what's called a blood boy, which is a young, athletic, 20-year-old male that's not supposed to do any drugs and only eats health food and works out every day. And they do it like this isn't how Peter Thiel does it, but in the show, like, the guy actually sits in a chair next to him and they hook up, you know, from one to the other, pumping the blood from his body to him. But there is a character in there that was called, what was the character named? Peter Gregory. He's the really weird character who kind of seems gay, either gay or autistic. I don't know, but he kind of talks like this and very haltingly and quiet and a little bit lispy, which, you know, you might say, I mean, it's probably wrong to say, is he gay or autistic? I'm not sure. But if anyone thinks it's wrong to say, I think he's gay, he's lisping, you know, and he doesn't have a lisp. I lived in San Francisco. A lot of gay dudes lisp. It's just a fact. And it's kind of weird, too. Like some comedian pointed out that, like, gay dudes all around America have the same accent. Why is that? They have the same accent. You know, they don't have a southern accent if they're from Alabama. They have a gay accent. It's weird. But anyway, so the guy, Peter Gregory in Silicon Valley, he's into seasteading, which Peter Gregory's into, like, you know, trying to avoid governments by building, you know, cities on platforms in the ocean.
That was something about Peter Thiel I'd actually forgot about. I knew it at one point that he was the one who started the seasteading.
The really, the one cool thing that Peter Thiel did that I liked was he has a like reverse scholarship where every year he pays like 10 people $100,000 to drop out of college and pursue their tech dreams or their, you know, start their company basically. Which is pretty cool, but
that gets them some libertarian cred. Some of this other stuff,
yeah, it really does. That's very, it's very original and libertarian. But he's also like, you know, one of the reasons Trump is president. Not that Hillary'd be any better; she's a nightmare. But there's footage in that of him like sitting next to Trump on a dais somewhere when Trump was running, shaking hands with him,
and Trump talking about what a wonderful guy he is, and then giving him a it was an awkward handshake too, because the way they were sitting, it was like this weird like. Hand on top of hand, like weird. Almost, it was creepy.
But, you know, I mean, he thinks IP is killing innovation. He thinks he wants open borders. He thinks taxation is theft.